Welcome to the Gleeful Podcast, where we discuss Fox's show Glee. I am Josh.
I'm Jen.
I'm Ed.
There we go. We kind of switched it up and everybody just went with it.
Oh, we're so professional.
So welcome to the Gleeful Podcast. We're going to discuss the finale episode entitled Journey. And we have had lots of people emailing saying, hey, when are you going to discuss the finale episode? So now is the time. It's now. Get excited.
It has arrived.
So anyway, we opened up with some Journey here. This is their mashup of Any Way You Want It and Lovin', Touchin', Squeezin'. Totally off topic. Jennifer, how do we feel about Journey?
I like Journey. I have a very strong soft spot for Journey.
Well, you also have an inner sorority girl.
Yeah. And so Yes.
Ed, how do we feel?
That too.
How do we feel about Journey, Ed?
I only know Journey. I only know it from a cover point of view. So, I mean, they're just as good as any other.
Really, you don't know Steve Perry Journey? You just know cover Journey?
All I know is Randy Jackson was in Journey, supposedly. That's what I keep being told, anyway.
It was like a tourist basis for 1 year.
Yeah, but I mean,
that's what I keep getting told.
Yes.
The 80s without Journey would have been, you know, so empty.
I'll give you that. I mean, I'm not a huge Journey fan, but Steve Perry knocks my socks off. Like, that dude had a voice that was just something else. So, you know, big points for that. Ed, so I'm not even going to ask you, Ed. Jennifer, favorite Journey song?
Oh. Lights?
Lights. Oh, of course it's Lights.
You used to listen to that a lot.
Lights. Go down.
It was very popular in the cake for a while.
There you go. And you said they used to play it in the bar you worked at.
Yes.
There you go.
Every night after closing at like 4 in the morning.
I have to go a Separate Ways. We listened to Separate Ways a lot on the cruise ship back when I worked on a cruise ship. We'd put that song on when we were extremely drunk and everyone was asleep. Don't ask me why. That song always came on when there was booze involved, which I really think is the only way to listen to Journey. Don't drink, underage viewers. All right, so let's talk about the episode. That was from the performance. You know, this was the season finale, and just in a second I'm going to ask you guys how you felt about the season finale, because it's always the most highly critiqued, highly debated episode of the season, so we will definitely discuss that in just a second. But first, just kind of a note on structure. Usually we kind of talk about the individual elements, the individual plot lines of the show kind of as a group, but there were so many plot lines in this one, and they were all kind of intermingled. So I think we're just going to kind of go through the show chronologically, and we're going to go break by break and what happened in each break, and try it out that way, and we'll see how we do. Because I always think it's good to change up the format right before when you have the most listeners.
Oh, absolutely.
So, Ed, you know, here it is. We finally got the season finale. We finally gone to regionals. What did you think about Journey?
The episode was amazing. It was too fast, and then it was amazing, and then it was a little bit disappointing, but it was still amazing.
So, what was disappointing about it, or do you want to get into that later?
Later. Let's just go into that later.
All right, Jennifer.
But it was amazing still. Overall, amazing. It just a little disappointing.
Ed, I completely agree. I loved it. I thought it was amazing. I bawled like a baby. I have one little wish for it, but I don't know. Okay, so my only disappointment with it is that I wish it had given us some sort of a cliffhanger for the summer. Mm. Like, there's nothing. It's all like good.
They write so defensively.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good they do, because I would hate for the show to be like, oh, it's over and we don't know what's happening with this. But like, in the second they stop writing defensively, they're gonna like get canceled. So don't listen to me. But it's just like, okay, thanks.
I mean, I did get
they left one plot line open: Rachel kissing Finn. That's it. That's the only thing they left open.
Well, actually, the other kiss too.
Yeah, it was the only plot line they left open.
Were the same relationships that were at the fall break. Yeah. That's what my disappointment is. I was like, hello, fall break all over again.
Well, the fall break left us with Thank you. apparently, there's a driver outside who agrees with Ed. The fall break left us with Will and Emma having their big, you know, their big kiss, which I thought was in some way, you know, both a cliffhanger and kind of a satisfaction of what we've been wanting for the first, what, 9 episodes that it had been. So I was cool with that. But I do agree with you on this one, Jennifer, that I think that everything was buttoned up. And the only cliffhanger that I saw was really Will and Emma, and not quite, you know, the whole like, hey, I'm dating my dentist thing, which wasn't all that much of a cliffhanger at the end of the day, because we haven't even discussed Will and Emma for the last however many episodes. Yeah. So it was
at
a
least
little silly.
4 to 5 episodes.
Yeah.
I guess I would say the only other semi cliffhanger is sort of they were sort of leading up to it in the very beginning of the show, is like sort of the pseudo Breakfast Club thing, where it's like, we were friends here, but are we going to be friends tomorrow? That type of thing. Like, how will all of their relationships change outside of Glee Club, you know, when and if it ever ends?
Which would make for a really interesting show if that weren't, if it didn't totally cut out the fact that we want to watch
the Glee
Club.
Yeah, we'd have to get rid of the Glee Club, right. Right, right. Well, see, I thought that's what they were kind of building up to.
Mm.
I mean, obviously, we all know that the show's been signed on for 2 more seasons, so we all know that, you know, it has to be around.
That's a very good point. I mean, we could get, when Saved by the Bell had the summer, you know, the season that was them at the summer, or they also did it on 90210. We could get that with Glee. I'd watch a Glee summer season where they're all at their jobs, but they'd have to find excuses to sing, or it wouldn't work.
They could
they could just have inner monologues that are songs. That's fine.
There you go. Just a lot of inner monologues. Well, in the first break of the show, we'll take it right off the top here. The first break of the show, we had Sue Sylvester revealed as a judge. And actually, we would find out that the judges were Sue Sylvester, Josh Groban, and Olivia Newton-John. Josh Groban making his triumphant return.
And Rod
Remington.
Whatever his name.
Thank you. I forgot. Rod Remington.
Yeah.
I love the fact that it was the four of them, and I also love the fact that Josh Groban and Olivia Newton-John like reprised themselves.
Yes.
I don't think I've ever seen like celebrities do that. You know?
Well, I mean, I also love that they play such unflattering versions of themselves.
Oh yeah, they're such caricatures of a celebrity, you know, who has this greater idea of who they are, and you know, they're just the way that they treat people, and oh, it's deliciously evil.
It was wonderful. One of my favorite lines in the whole episode was when Olivia Newton-John says to Sue Sylvester, "You're not famous. You just try hard." It was kind of like the entire summation of Sue Sylvester as a human being. It's like, she's not beautiful. She's not innately talented. She just works harder than anybody else and pushes everyone around her to be, you know, in her eyes, excellent. And mm-hmm. it was just a really kind of telling moment from those characters. And I love Josh Groban, where he's like, I have to admit too, now I don't even know why Sue's here. I don't even know what's going on. As I've said on the show before, I hate Josh Groban's music, but I seem to love him whenever he does these guest spots or in interviews.
Really?
He's an incredibly
you hate
charming
his music?
Guy. I do. I find it really
to where
cheesy.
You are is classic.
It's what?
Classic.
Oh, what song?
To Where You Are.
Oh, I've never that's heard
my,
it.
That's my favorite Josh Groban song.
There you go. We should listen to it.
You probably haven't heard any of his music other than the Christmas album that
you
I make
wake
you listen
me
to.
Up. No, Raise Me Up. You Raise Me
Up. you wake me up. Okay, this is not like the Go-Go's.
There you go.
Wow.
We also got a flashback of Puck and Quinn for their that's big Wham. Evening. What?
A Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go was Wham.
Was
but
Wham.
That's cool.
We got darn it. I did fail. Darn it.
We got a flashback of Puck and Quinn for where they conceived the child, I guess.
I love that she had wine coolers, because they said,
yep.
She
oh,
said,
yes.
I was feeling a little fat and I had some wine coolers. And then there were wine coolers.
Yeah.
And she says, say it again. And we all think he's going to say, I love you. And he says, you're not fat.
Yes. She's like, tell me one more time.
But I think that Diana Agron must cherish these few scenes. Like, I think that's probably the only scene she's had in the last, you know, 12, 13 episodes where she didn't have to wear a stomach.
Yeah,
that
baby
must
bump.
Be exciting to not have to wear the baby bump for at least a little while. I get to act
it. Doesn't slow her down, though.
Oh, no.
She's the most mobile pregnant person I've ever seen.
We got a couple emails
about... She's very upwardly mobile. Yeah.
Yes.
We did get a couple emails about that. That was the most unbelievable baby bump in the world. Like, when she was wearing the gold lame dress, and you could barely even tell that it was there.
No, absolutely. Like, nothing about her body changed outside of this, you know, little tummy. I mean, okay, granted, she's, you know, a young athlete, but if she didn't just keep grabbing it every now and then during regionals, I wouldn't have known that it was actually on there.
Yes.
Because the way the dress was hiding it.
And then we had the song nomination party where everyone was really depressed. Really, the whole first break of the show was about crying.
Oh, yeah.
The club was crying because they thought that Sue was going to eliminate them. Will was crying because he didn't want to let go of the club. He had an interesting conversation with Emma where she said that she is seeing someone. And finally, Will said, hey, we're going to sing some Journey stuff. Before we get to that, though, what do we think about... What were you saying?
Ed, you watch Ugly Betty. What did you think when she said that she was dating a dentist?
I wasn't thinking of that.
Oh, I totally thought of that. Because she dated a dentist. She was cheating on her boyfriend, yeah.
Yeah, she did. I read on Oh No, They Didn't.
John Stamos?
That it's John Stamos next season.
Yes. For that. John Stamos will be appearing as the dentist next season.
Okay.
What?
Oh, no. Sorry about my little aside. Go ahead.
Oh, no, absolutely. So what do we think about Will or Emma dating this dentist? Personally, I was kind of annoyed by Will and Emma in this episode because they've barely been mentioned for weeks. And I really like the Will and Emma plot lines. I love Emma as a character. I love how she's an actual guidance counselor who provides guidance, like unheard of in my personal history. And really in television, guidance counselors tend to be kind of jokes, but she actually really cares about the kids. And I love Emma as a character. And she's this fascinating, you know, one of the other hot button issues that Glee likes to talk about, this obsessive compulsive disorder. Excuse me. But now she's dating a dentist kind of out of nowhere, and it just seemed like they were tacking this on to the last episode. It didn't feel like, it felt kind of like it came out of nowhere. Jennifer, you're looking at me like I'm crazy.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know how it could really come out of nowhere because we haven't seen her. I mean, I think, you know, she told Will they were going to take a break, but I guess that's personally and professionally. So they apparently had no conversations for the last couple of months. And I don't think it's that out of the blue.
And of course it's a dentist. Of course it's
I know.
And that's her dream, man. He sterilizes all of his instruments.
I love, she says, he showed me this machine he uses to sterilize his instruments and we went out. Like, that's what sealed the deal for Emma.
I think that's awesome.
Ed, did you think it came out of nowhere or did it seem perfectly natural?
No, I don't think it came out of nowhere at all. I mean, we haven't seen her. Like, for all we know, she could have been mountain climbing for the past 3 months. So, whatever.
That would be
logical.
Awesome.
More, seeing Emma more logical than that.
I'd love to see Emma mountain climb with that hair.
I love that she always has, like, always has that little swoop. I'm like, I love you, Emma.
She also, she rocks a cardigan like nobody's business.
Oh, totally.
if you were to go into that closet, it would be nothing but skirts and cardigans and like
and
ruffled
brooches.
Collars.
Brooches, like Suzanne would wear. Yeah.
So a listener actually, oh crap, I'm going to feel horrible that I'm not going to be able to find this right away. A listener sent us the list of pamphlets in her office.
Oh, because we had noticed in the beginning that they used to change.
Yes.
I haven't.
Like, wasn't one like, yuck, I'm in love with my stepmom or something obscene?
Yes, it was something along those lines. You guys talk about something interesting. Oh, here we go. Never mind.
Just kidding. Not interesting. Again.
A listener, Garrett, sent us a list of the pamphlets he was able to see. One was Loose. The other one was Yuck My Privates. Here's the one you had, Ed. Help, I'm in love with my stepmom.
Nice.
And this one could actually piss some people off. This was Autism, the Pretend Disease.
Yikes.
Yeah, that's borderline, if not totally into inappropriate. But it is fun to have Emma back, and we got to see a passionate Emma in this episode.
I like her.
Oh, it's fantastic to see that. When she was really fighting for Will and kind of saying, like, hey, you know, she always has the best kernels of wisdom, but... And
when she was in Principal Figgins' office, I definitely thought she was getting fired or something.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I was like, oh, she's getting fired?
Yeah.
Well, we'll definitely get to that scene. But eventually, Will kind of went ahead and said, hey, we're going to do Journey. That's what got us here. And let's recapture that. So they put together a Journey medley. We opened up with Any Way You Want It, which was a mashup of Any Way You Want It with Lovin', Touchin', and Squeezin'. Any Way You Want It, which includes the lyric, she loves to move, she loves to groove, she loves the lovin' things. Always bugs me when he says that. Always bugs me. But let's go ahead and listen to Faithfully. They actually performed this on the Glee Tour. This was their last big number on the Glee Tour.
Yeah, we didn't understand. Go ahead, Ed.
I was going to say, I loved how they did all three songs in a row. Like, it was so epic.
Yeah.
It was. Well, here's a bit of Faithfully, and this was the big duet.
Into the midnight sun, wheels go round and round, you're on my mind.
Restless hearts sleep alone tonight, sending all my love along the wire. They say that the road ain't no place to start a family. Right down the line, it's been you and me. That love and music, man, ain't always what it's supposed to be. Oh boy, you stand by me. I'm forever yours. Faithfully.
It's funny that they've done this song and Beth, because they both fall under this heading of 80s rock songs that were about how hard it is to be in a rock band. Mm. Like, the lyrics are both kind of talking to a woman and being like, man, it's tough. It's tough to be in a rock band. But, you know, it's going to be okay. Taking care of
it. I miss you while I'm gone.
Exactly. There was a whole, like, genre of music that came out at that time. Ed, were you familiar with this particular Journey song? This is really their big ballad.
No, I had no idea this song was Journey until I looked it up.
Jennifer, wedding song? Big wedding song? Near time?
It was in high school.
Oh, well, I don't know. Maybe you had friends that got married young.
It was big at school dances. How's
there you
that?
Go.
Swing I was thinking, like, this is like a school dance song.
Totally. Oh, it's totally. High school cafeteria, no less.
So a couple of things about the Faithfully, or actually this whole Glee medley that jumped out at me, and I'll just list them real quick. Bumpets. All the girls had crazy bumpets going on their hair.
I was envious.
This whole sequence, the whole regionals, was shot at the Wilshire Saban Theater, which Jennifer and I have been to multiple times. It's down on Wilshire, shockingly. And it's where we saw all of the Paley Festival Q&As, including the Q&A with the cast of Glee. So it was really funny, like, when they walked into that lobby, I'm like, oh my god, I've been in that lobby so many times.
Yeah.
And the whole house, they made it look gorgeous, because that theater in real life is kind of a dive.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It just it needed that level of
yes.
spiffing up.
It needs some polish.
Oh, totally. No, it's a gorgeous theater. And there's one shot when they have the camera on the stage and they're shooting up across the top balcony. And if you look in the very, 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 very back, that's where we were for Glee.
Exactly. And where we were for Lost.
Lost, yes.
But yeah, so you're right. I'm mixing it up with the other theater we went to on Wilshire, the Ebel. But the Saban was a very nice area. It was a nice front.
Oh,
it was just very dusty.
Very classic. Yeah, you know. But very classic with the, you know, the gilded molding and the velvet curtains. I thought it was great.
Yeah. Well, it's one of many gorgeous old theaters that we have in Los Angeles that just never get used except for movies and TV shows and the occasional, like, concert. But they sit empty most of the time. So that was kind of a trip to see that. We already mentioned the baby bump. The other big thing that made me laugh is at the beginning of this number, when they came walking down and they walked down the aisles when they were singing, Finn and Rachel, and then they got to the end of the aisles and they walked together, and then they stepped away from each other backwards. And if you watch, Rachel's Lea Michele is just about to tip over in those heels. Like, walking backwards in heels, don't ask me how I know, not easy to do. And so she's just about to lose it, but she holds it. She's a pro.
Nice.
Ed, what it, just give me this whole number. It was really impressive that they did essentially three full songs in totally uninterrupted, complete songs in a row. Really blew me away that they were willing to spend that much time on this number. Ed, what did you think of it?
I loved it. It made it a real competition. This is kind of how it really would be. I mean, not exactly, not... I mean, probably wouldn't be as good if it was real, but it made it seem really authentic. Like, it was like a competition, like, and it showed a journey, if you will. So.
Aww.
Well, and you make a good point. I mean, it really touched on some of the resonant themes throughout the season. Faithfully being a ballad, Any Way You Want It, Love and Touch and Squeeze and being a mashup, and then coming back to where they started with a new version of Don't Stop Believin'.
Like this is how it is. Like, I was in choir in high school. Oh, everyone is shocked. And and I went to, and we went to, we didn't get as far as they did. And that's how we did it. We did three songs in a row. Like, that's just how you do it.
Mm-hmm. I just really appreciated that they were willing to have the patience to show their entire production number. You know, they didn't cut away except to, you know, hit the audience or to show Mr. Schuster in the back, like, cheering along, which is one of my favorite parts of the whole thing.
Or when they kept showing Sue and she's the only one seated.
Yeah.
And she's just looking around at all these people.
Like, I don't really understand. Crazy? Everyone looks so happy.
Oh, my God. What would you have done to be in that audience when they shot that? God. I mean, I almost jumped up too. Like, there was a moment where I felt almost like I was cheating by sitting down watching it. It was really...
They should invite me because I'd just be tweeting the whole time.
Oh, I'm
CMG, they're doing this song and this song. And
I'm
this
sure
song,
there's a rule. Jennifer, what'd you think of this number?
Oh, I thought it was amazing. Even though we saw it live, I enjoyed it so much more.
It wasn't the same live. No. They hadn't quite polished it yet.
No, they hadn't. And it kind of left us wondering why they were doing all this. I thought it was fantastic. They did. I mean, I read an article and they were talking about Kevin McHale, and who plays Artie, and he was talking about how filming this last episode was really emotional. So, you know, in several scenes throughout the episode, you see members get very emotional. Glee members get really emotional. He's like, that was all real. He said, we kind of, you know, just started this thing and we didn't know what it was going to be. And it's been amazing and incredible. And we just finished the tour and now we're finishing the show. And now we're going to break. And there's this emotional level that everybody's at, so it's not all just acting up there. So it was really exciting and happy for them.
You could get a sense of that. I mean, when you see these kids in interviews and even us, like, I look at what, you know, how Glee has changed our lives, and it is kind of, you, it's amazing what this little show that all of our friends said probably wouldn't last a season.
Oh, I wish I'd bet Mark money on this one. Yeah. He kept calling it Cop Rock.
Yeah. which we will definitely talk about in a later episode of Gleeful. But it's amazing what has come of this little tiny show that, you know, barely got on the air. So other things to mention about this this particular number, we did get the introduction of the judges in this number. We had Josh Groban, Olivia Newton-John, Rod Remington, and Sue Sylvester. Sue Sylvester, who's the writer of the autobiography, Ed, what was her autobiography
I'm
called?
I'm a winner and you're fat.
Awesome.
So what you missed was that before the William McKinley went, the Oral Intensity did a mashup of Olivia Newton-John and Josh Groban. I was like, DMG amazing.
I was actually disappointed that they didn't have that up for download. I would have loved to hear what Oral Intensity sounds.
I know, it would have been fun, but they didn't do it.
I'm sorry, and I just pronounced it wrong, which you and I were talking about this before, Ed. I pronounced it wrong. I pronounced it Oral Intensity, but it's actually Aural Intensity, right?
Yeah.
It's
but
A-U.
Oral Intensity is way cooler.
Wow.
So we're just going to leave it at whatever it is.
To listener, listener Mons and I actually pronounced it, or actually wrote it wrong in an email to her, or I'm sorry, to them as well. I apologize if, since you didn't mention your gender. So yeah, it was funny that we had this glee club that we kind of heard they were wearing white. I remember yeah. that during the decision, but we never really got a sense of who Arl Intensity was supposed to be, what school they came from. We didn't see anything of them.
They were from Indiana. They said it. I heard it.
Yeah.
They were from where?
Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Oh, Fort Wayne. Okay. Well,
and the ridiculously named, or the yes. not at all ridiculously named.
yeah. That Sue oh, called
him at the end.
Yeah.
So good.
Oh, but okay. So, but going back to the scene when the Glee Club was listening to them perform, they're getting kind of psyched out. They're like, how are we going to compete? Because they're doing a mashup of, you know, Olivia Newton-John, Josh Groban, and, you know, Mr. Schuster comes in and... And, you know, he had that great joke. He's like, well, you know, what do we have that they don't have? Finn's dancing.
Yeah. Which we've talked on the show. I really like Finn's dancing because there's a certain reality to the fact that, like, he can't.
He's a stiff white boy.
Yeah, he's a stiff white boy. But it is hilarious when you see him. You know, it is the story. It's hilarious when you see him in live because he's totally like that.
Oh yeah,
he can't dance for his life.
He's great though. He's great in his.
He's totally committed
movements,
to it.
Yes.
Yeah, and then we finished out that break with Quinn's water breaking and a reunion with her mother.
Yes,
the reunion kind of bugged me.
Why?
For some reason,
why did it bug you?
For some reason, I wanted Quinn to be more like, you kicked me out. Like,
she had pressing issues.
Her mom didn't kick her out. Her father kicked her out.
Well, but her mother let her go.
Yeah.
Well, but, I mean, there was so much happening in that moment. I'm sure she was, first of all, in shock.
Yes.
Second of all, in the throes of pre-labor. I think she can, you know, be cut a break for not acting in your mind.
for not being angsty enough or something.
Well, I'm just saying, like, within the context of drama, like, for Quinn's character to make a full, you know, a full evolution from who she was to who she is now, it seemed like the new Quinn would have been like, you know what, I have, you know, these are the people that have been taking care of me. You have not been taking care of me. I can't share this with you right now. Like this belongs to the ones that to my new family. Now I'll go ahead and admit that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you're my mommy and I need you by my side and yada, yada. But still, it is fantasy after all.
I know. Oh, I must say the Bohemian, like, we're about to get into this. I hope the Bohemian Rhapsody number was so epic. It was like I was in control of the camera. I would do that.
Well, let's go ahead and do that. Well, let's go ahead and listen to Bohemian Rhapsody. This is with Jonathan Groff on lead vocals and vocal adrenaline doing the rest. We had one listener who emailed and said, remember when Vocal Adrenaline was a whole bunch of people singing together? Now it's just one guy singing in front of a whole bunch of people. But this actually strikes me as more realistic to have the soloist in front. Here is Bohemian Rhapsody.
I'm just a poor boy. I need no sympathy.
Because I'm easy come, easy go. Little high, little low.
Any way the wind blows doesn't really matter to me. Mama just killed a man, put a gun against his head, pulled my trigger, now he's dead. Mama, life had just begun, but now I've gone and thrown it all away. Mama, ooh, didn't mean to make you cry. If I'm not if nothing really matters, I
I wonder what it must feel like for Jonathan Groff. I'm sure he doesn't really care, but to know that his whole purpose on this show is to play a character that, like, has no soul. like they're constantly saying, you know, in this episode, Rachel goes, you know that Jesse's great, but he has no heart. He has no soul when he sings.
Well, he's singing this 2 minutes, six-minute song about nothing really matters to me.
It's true.
It's very telling.
So, Ed, Bohemian Rhapsody, gush, go.
It was amazing. I love the dancing. It was very well orchestrated. That's the only way to put it. And I loved the piano solo. And I love Vocal Adrenaline. Vocal Adrenaline defeats New Directions any day.
So. Jennifer, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Amazing. I thought it was amazing. Did you read, Ed, how Jonathan Groff got kicked by one of the girls he was flipping and her heel caught his arm and he has a 6-inch gash on his bicep?
Oh, no. I'm glad I didn't. And now I just feel bad.
He said that, you know, one girl sprained her ankle, another girl broke a finger, somebody cracked something else. He's like, so many people got injured. They rehearsed it 8 hours a day for 3 days. But I thought it was amazing. And the first time, you know, they started kind of switching back and forth between showing Vocal Adrenaline and showing Quinn giving birth, I'm like, oh, this is going to be cheesy. But the more I watched it, I'm like, it's so good. Like, everything down to, like, some of the lines we're saying, and then, like, even Puck's face when I think it was in this scene, they're like, oh, no. You see Puck's face. What were you going to say?
My only problem with the whole thing is why was Mercedes in the room?
Well, because she lives with Mercedes right now.
Okay,
like,
no,
she and Mercedes are tight.
That's what other people said to me when I asked them.
Okay.
That doesn't
give
enough sense.
Why not? She's her friend. She took her in.
Since when are Mercedes and Quinn's friends? Well, since home? Okay, that's like 3 months. Okay.
Yeah.
You do not need her in the delivery room. Puck makes sense.
All
her
I
mom
know-
that Mercedes. Question mark?
I think it was perfectly appropriate to have Mercedes in the delivery room, personally. Jennifer?
I personally haven't gone through it, but from what I've heard, you do not tell a woman in labor what she can and can't have. And if in that moment she says Mercedes is in the room, Mercedes is in the room.
Now, I do kind of, I don't know, I personally I felt that the whole cutting back and forth took away from a bit of Vocal Adrenaline. It was really well done, and
no,
I understood
no, because,
exactly what they were going for.
The performance, although stellar, was only intensified by this
cutting
deep
back
emotional plot that Quinn was going through.
So I agree with you, but to a point. My thing is, one, the Bohemian Rhapsody number, like, as a musical theater geek, as a huge Queen fan, like, obviously, as I've said before, I think that Jonathan Groff is the best vocalist on the show, definitely the best male vocalist. I thought the Bohemian Rhapsody number was one of the greatest production numbers I've ever seen in my life. Like, the choreography and the vocals and the whole assembly of it, to me, it was perfection. Like, it could not have been better. And then to cut away from that to Quinn was working for me until she started kind of singing along, like with the no, 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 no part. And then when she was shouting insults at Puck, which I know is a funny joke and was like a huge joke in the 80s. Every time a woman gave birth in a movie or television show in the 80s, she would start insulting her husband. But I don't know that that actually happens in real life. And it just seemed kind of stupid. To me, the comedy that was coming out of one side was undermining the greatness of Vocal Adrenaline's performance and Jonathan Groff's performance, which very well could be the last time we see him on this show.
You're forgetting one major factor here.
Go on.
No one cares about any individuals in Vocal Adrenaline.
but Jesse's different.
No one cares. Like, no one cares. Like, no one cares. Like, oh, look at the blonde guy who got a solo at that moment. Oh, that girl who sang for 3 seconds on Rehab got a solo again. No one cares. I mean, I care, but no one cares. Like, in realistically. So, no one cares about the Vocal Adrenaline people. And it was just supposed to be used as a counterpoint to, cause like, otherwise this, I feel like if there was just a birthing scene, it would just be lame. It would not be gleeful.
I totally agree.
Was gleeful.
I agree. This was gleeful, straight up. I'm not going to deny that.
And I think if we had not had to, but I think if they showed the full 6-minute present performance of Vocal Adrenaline, I think it would be more difficult in people's minds to still cheer for New Directions. Because it is so clearly a better performance.
So, again, just to reiterate my point is not so much that I disliked the cutting back and forth as much as I thought that when in Quinn's scenes, when they were having comedic moments or kind of silly things, if Quinn's stuff was all played silent and the only audio was the performance of the Bohemian Rhapsody, that would have been like perfection for me. Like, I think
no, when she's screaming
totally
let me go,
that was so dumb.
It was so
that was just
good.
Goofy.
I just went ahead and gleegasm right there.
Yeah, you're creating new words all the time. Totally unrelated note, but on the Jonathan Groff mention, Kate from North Carolina sent us a photograph of Jonathan Groff in the red Lady Gaga number.
I said I saw him. Totally saw him. I was like, that is his hair.
That's
behind
awesome.
That red lingerie mask.
So thank you very much to listener Kate. Big points for that. And I did want to point out, it was listener Jennifer who had, which one was it? Yes, it was listener Jennifer who'd mentioned the Bumpets, and she got best email of the week. So, which is a totally informal prize that I give to one email each week. So I was really impressed that we spent 6 full minutes with Bohemian Rhapsody. Not only that we spent, I mean, it was an entire break. It was an entire 6-minute break of just Bohemian Rhapsody, and they didn't interrupt the song. How many times have I seen that song on American Idol and Rockstar and America's Got Talent, I would assume, because I wouldn't dare watch it, where they cut that song up into little pieces. So to do that song
in 1:30.
Oh, yeah.
Kelly Pickler, Constantine Nerlis.
So yeah. to give that its full due, such a great song, and to give it its full due and just let it be what it is, huge points to Glee for that. I mean, I've never seen that on television, so fantastic. That was pretty much the entire break. After that, Rachel goes ahead and asks Shelby to become a teacher at McKinley. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Did I miss something?
Actually, we skipped a kind of a big thing. Finn telling Rachel that he loved her. The start of...
That's a good point. We did skip that. Finn told Rachel that he loved her. Jennifer, what did you think about that?
You know what? I don't know. I believe that he does love her, but it was just so weird. She had no response for him other than a smile, and then they went off and, you know, sang their little hearts out.
It's true. I mean, I thought that it was... this is going to sound horrible, but there was a part of me that kind of saw the team captain in Finn come out a moment, and he was like, to get the best performance in this moment. And as a performer, I mean, I think he might have seen it himself too. To get the performance out of this moment, I love this woman right now. and I mean, how couldn't he? Like, let's be honest. They've been through so much. I mean, a part of him has to love Rachel at this point.
Yeah.
But are we going to see it play out next season? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Ed, what did you think about Finn telling Rachel he loved her?
Of course it's going to play out next season. That's like one of the two plots that they left open. Like, even though they might solve it lamely, they need to at least explore it. Because right now, if they only had what they had left open, they'd have Will and Emma, and they would have Rachel and Finn, and that'd be the two storylines that they had.
Well, there was some classic stuff in the judging room. After we saw the performances, we went into the judging room, and the conversation between those four characters, I mean, it's not worth reciting here, but my personal favorites were Olivia Newton-John say, "Are they a poor person's school?" And of course, "You're not a celebrity, you just try hard," that she said to Sue. They were such a fun judges panel. We've discussed it a little bit earlier, but do you guys have anything else to say about the judges in this episode?
Both judging panels, both for regionals and sectionals, they are both stellar. And as long as they can make it really lame and make it like lame, but Lee does not do lame, so there's no problem.
Oh, I thought it was great. Yeah, I mean, if it was a really serious, you know, focused group, I think it would have been It just would have been so boring.
Yeah.
But they were all fantastic.
Now, we had Rachel asking Shelby to come to be a teacher at McKinley High. It just felt odd to me. Like, it seemed like we'd already buttoned up Rachel and Shelby already. And to have them back, I don't know, for me it felt kind of fake, kind of maybe it was beautiful that Rachel had one last, you know, attempt at bringing this together. I don't know, Ed, Rachel, and Shelby, did it ring true for you?
I'm just glad. Well, see, it was an important scene because it revealed, well, it didn't reveal, like, we already knew that Shelby wanted a second chance with the child, and it was important. It was an important scene, but I'm glad that they're not really together.
It was quick. It was definitely quick.
Yeah, this season finale went by so fast. It was like over, and I was like, and? Like, that was like 10 minutes, right? Where's the rest of the show?
I agree. Like, I don't know if I would have gone for a full, or certainly not a full 2 hours, maybe not even 90 minutes, but another 10 minutes, maybe?
No, minutes? I want a 2 hour. Like, they could have did an oral intensity number. They could have done stuff. I mean,
well, they could have done stuff, but would it have been necessary? Like, I don't really know that the show would have been made better by an oral intensity.
Is the show necessary?
It is now.
Sue could have hooked up with Josh Groban.
That would have been hilarious.
She hooks up with a lot of the guest stars.
That would have been awesome. And do you like angry sex? It's the only kind I know. Jennifer, you wanted to say something about Shelby and Rachel?
Yeah, I thought it was necessary. I mean, and maybe a little too quick, but they left the last time we saw them together, they kind of left it sort of open and like, hey, well, let's see how it goes. And obviously nothing was coming of it. And then this whole fallout with Jesse and now the competition, you know, heating up with Vocal Adrenaline. I think it was necessary for Rachel to just say, hey, is this going to happen or not? And
yeah.
And I'm glad she did. And yes, it made what was even so obvious from the very beginning, the first time we met Shelby and she said she always wanted a little baby girl. It just sort of, you know, made it all make sense.
Yeah, if you hadn't figured it out by then that Shelby was going to get the baby, that scene drove it home.
Yeah.
that scene definitely was going to make it happen. Ed, had you figured it out that Shelby was going to get the baby?
Well, it crossed my mind on the episode theatricality when she was like, I can't have a child. And Quinn was in the audience randomly for that scene. So,
true.
I don't know. It wasn't like out of left field. So, understandable.
Yeah.
So eventually they gave the awards out and they had the one shot we got of Aural Intensity in the stage in their white outfits, or on the stage in their white outfits. Sue had some of her best lines all season in this episode, particularly the not at all stupidly named Aural Intensity.
Yes.
And I think my favorite of the episode was when she's talking to the audience and she says, as you all know, Glee Club is, and I can't even finish that sentence. So eventually she went ahead and gave it to, the number one or number two runner up was Aural Intensity and the winner was Vocal Adrenaline. Thus, meaning that New Directions did not even place. Listener Monzel,
I was under the impression that third place was placing, but I guess that would require there to be more than three.
Exactly, more than three acts.
Listener Monzel sent a dissertation on the voting, which I was incredibly impressed by going through what everybody's votes were. Monzen, and their point was that there's no way that New Directions should not have placed, like, given everybody's opinions in the previous conversation, all the judges' opinions in the previous conversation.
She said it was possible as long as Josh Groban put New Directions as second instead of first.
Okay, well, there you go. To me, I never thought about it that deeply. I guess it's a horrible thing to say, but to me, it's just kind of like the drama gods do what the drama gods do, and you kind of let it happen. But I just wanted to call that email out because it was so impressively written. But did that guy bother you two at all? The voting? Did it seem odd?
No.
Okay.
No, I mean, I just assumed that, well, ultimately we see how she votes, but I just assumed that after the whole skirmish, because we didn't even talk about their little fallout. Like once, you know, Sue started to defend the kids and, in the initial round of voting, and then Josh Groban was like, yeah, well, now you're making me question why you're even here. So maybe it was just a whole backlash on her and her opinion. So even though he said, hey, you know, what about those new directions? And how about that brunette? She's really good. I think that it, from the sounds of it, it just like the room just turned on Sue. Sue became the, you know, the representative for New Directions. And that was it. They're all done.
Yeah.
So I just took it from that point that the other three judges put them all in third.
That's a good, yeah, I buy that.
And how touching.
That's what worked for me.
Yeah. How touching was it for her to actually, you know, say, hey, come on, they're just kids.
Yeah.
Ugh. Well, and, that was really, really
because if Sue is anything, she's an educator above
she
all.
Is. She is, and she loves those kids. And
she doesn't want to admit it. She'd never admit it, but she loves the kids.
Yeah. And she doesn't seem to want their respect or admiration or anything. She just wants their excellence.
Fear.
And fear.
Well, eventually the kids got back to school, assuming that their glee club would be shut down. And as a gift for Mr. Schuster, they did perform To Sir With Love. So let's go ahead and give that a listen. Now, To Sir With Love, I'm assuming, Ed, the only other time you've heard this song is when Lulu performed it on American Idol.
So what if that's the only memory I have of this song?
Honestly.
So what?
100% honestly, it's the first time I'd heard it too, was when Lulu performed it on American Idol. I've told you
this. Has ever seen the movie?
American Idol Season 6, Top 11?
Sydney Poitier?
Well,
I'm impressed. To Sir With Love, here's the Glee cast. This did remind me a lot of the My Life Would Suck Without You number, which they also performed for Mr. Schuster as kind of a thank you.
How, see, that doesn't make sense, because My Life Would Suck Without You was, like, joy-filled, and this was more retrospective.
Well, but
In their minds, it was the end.
I like these gifts to each other, you know, these ways that the songs don't always have to be illustrating, you know, your inner turmoil or your struggle. I mean, occasionally a song is just a thank you to somebody. It's just like, hey, you know, it means a lot what you've done for me, and this is my gift to you. So I was really so mad
because everyone got a solo.
Except for Brittany, Mike, and Matt.
Except for Brittany, Mike, and Matt. I was like, even Santana got a solo again.
Yep.
Like, you can't give it if you're going to keep taking it away or something. I don't know.
But they did get lines. Brittany's lines.
Yes, they got lines. That's why I thought they were going to give it.
I was disappointed by that too. I thought that they deserved a moment of song, a moment to sing in those. I mean, imagine if they had. That would have been so amazing.
It is so good.
Would have been so excited. And it was kind of a game of chicken. Like, I was just sitting there going, are they going to do it? Did these guys get to sing? But no. Jennifer, what did you think of the To Sir With Love number?
Oh, I thought it was great. It was very touching, very emotional. Yes, I was waiting for the others to sing too, and it was good that of the other singers that we've actually heard this year, that we did actually hear from all of them.
Mm-hmm. And that was nice. It was nice that everybody got a moment.
Yeah.
Before that, we'd had Emma and Will's kind of showdown. Emma, we see having a giant fight with Principal Figgins, and it's really the most passionate we've seen Emma all season. It was kind of an exciting moment. She came to Will. Will told her that he loved her, which kind of felt out of place. I don't know, like almost kind of like, I want to make this moment like kind of, it felt kind of guyish. Like a guy would be like, hey, I know that you're dating somebody else, so just because that, I just want you to know that I love you. Like, it's a total,
yeah, do what you want with it,
jilted ex thing.
You guys.
Well, seriously, you've never done that? Well, maybe not you personally, but had the ladies do that to Josh. Ed, what did you think of Will and Emma in this scene?
I thought it was amazing. I mean, I want them together. We want them together.
Yeah, we do.
Like, those are the feelings we have. It just hasn't come to fruition yet.
There's a quote from the show Ed with Julie Bowen and what was that guy's name?
You really Callahan. Like
Callahan.
Tom Callahan?
Yeah. And the whole concept of Ed being that he'd like moved back to his hometown and had this like unrequited love with this girl. And the show went on for seasons and seasons. And he says one day he went to the writers and he said, when are you finally just going to put Ed together with this girl he's been in love with for, you know, the last three seasons? And the writers said, when all of our kids' college is paid for.
Nice.
We'll put you guys together.
Nice.
And I don't want that to happen with Will and Emma. Like, I don't want us to be 4 years down the line and Will and Emma are still playing the Will They or Won't
Well, the thing is, even if the Glee kids go, Will and Emma will still be there.
That's
so
true.
So this plot line could go on forever.
That's what scares me. I do not want that to happen.
But I like this Emma. Like, I like this Emma, the possibility of this Emma with Will better than the former Emma. She's just feisty, impassioned, strong Emma is great.
Well, and from a totally personal standpoint, I think that, or from like a real world standpoint, the woman that Emma is now can commit to Will, whereas like kind of the puppy dog that just had a big crush on him, that would never have gone well.
Right, because she had, you know, delusions about who he was as a man.
Yeah. She has the line about the choir room. One of the listeners had said it was crazy that they were taking down the choir room. Well, Emma had said that Principal Figgins has already given it to the Mock UN.
Yeah.
So that's why they were deconstructing the choir room. We also had a quick moment.
Well, then Rachel would have still been in there as illustrated in episode 12, Thunderclap. She was in the Mock UN.
That's
yes.
true. We also had a quick moment with Puck and Quinn where they were looking over the baby, the newborn, and Quinn said, do you love me? And Puck said, yes, especially now. Which is oddly heartbreaking to me because it almost seems like I didn't before as much and I might not tomorrow, but right now I do. But at the same time, like, the writer in me went, man, that's a good line.
Yeah.
Somebody knocked it out of the park with that one. I don't know. Like, you're kind of, Jennifer,
yeah.
You're looking like you disagree.
No, it was a really sweet moment. I mean, he's the high school bad boy. And, you know, he slept with all the other girls in the cheerleading squad. But, I mean, he definitely has a certain level of affection for her. And I think, you know, now that, you know, she is the mother of his child, although they're not going to raise her, that is a whole other type of love that will never go away, whether mm-hmm. or not they ever have a romantic relationship or anything like that. I took it more like, you know, this is something that we'll share forever.
That's a very sweet way to look at it.
Oh, thank you.
That's nice. Ed, do you have an opinion on Puck and Quinn?
I'm not sure what's going to happen in the future. And right now, I don't really want them together. They were only being attached by this child and and wine coolers and feeling fat. So
preyed on insecurities.
And
yeah,
mohawks.
So I really didn't really like them together. So, yeah.
But I have no idea who they would be together. Because, like, she was, you know, she was Finn's girlfriend, and then she was this pregnant outcast. So,
yeah.
You know. And
she was kind of with Puck, but only in name only.
Yeah, only
Well, and Santana proximity. Keeps claiming that he's hers. And yeah. Then Mercedes had a little spout with that. Who knows?
Puck it's is, high school.
It's
high Puck school. Is a sex shark.
Not
if
my
he stops,
high school.
He dies.
That's true. If he stops, he dies. Well, eventually Sue did give the Sue went to Principal Figgins, called him one last favor so that the Glee Club could get one more year, and she proceeded to tell Will that he got one more year as he was taking his paperwork down. And again, it was not a monologue worth reciting, but Sue's conversation with Will when she tells him he gets one more year is one of the funniest things Sue has done all year. That dialogue just killed me. There were too many great jokes to write down. So that whole scene was hilarious. And then Will said, you know, Sue, deep down, you're really a good person. And she said, I will vomit in your mouth.
And it was so funny because it looked like she was fighting back laughter when she's like trying to like squeeze her hand away from him. But I mean, again, you know, she comes out and she actually says, I don't like you, but I admire you and I respect you as an educator and, mm-hmm. and I respect what you do for these kids. So yeah, like that scene when she's in the back of the audience crying along. I mean, it's, again, I don't think she's looking for the same sort of adulation from her kids, but I think, you know, it really drove home who Will is to them. So it was really, you know, I thought it was really sweet.
Now, Ed, as this scene was going on, I totally was thinking of you because you like to kind of project or predict what's going to happen in the future. And as far as now Sue has kind of said, I don't hate you. And if she comes back next season and continues trying to take down the Glee Club, it's going to seem a little silly because she had the opportunity to take down the Glee Club and she didn't do it. So do you think that she's going to keep just trying on that path of taking down the Glee Club? Or do you think next season Sue will have a new motivation to fight against Will?
I think someone else is going to take down Glee Club.
Really?
Someone bigger, badder. I don't know.
Bigger than Sue?
Like there needs to be something. There needs to be something more epic.
A bigger threat.
A bigger threat. A larger shark in the water.
Wow, that's an interesting idea. I kind of like that. You should fan fiction away on that one.
True. My fan fiction. See, the problem, if I was in charge of Glee, oh my god, everything would just be songs about emotional turmoil, and none of the plot would ever move along. So don't put me in charge.
Well, eventually, Will, as a thank you to the Glee Clubbers, he performed Somewhere Over the Rainbow with Puck. I guess they actually did this at the last New York date on the tour, which we were
we
not
missed
there.
All the good ones.
But let's go ahead and listen to Over the Rainbow. This was also Matthew Morrison's audition song. When he auditioned for the show, he performed this. And yes. He plays the ukulele. I need to get a ukulele. Here it is, Over the Rainbow.
Somewhere over the
I'll learn my mandolin first.
Thank you.
Way up high,
I'll learn this song.
There's a land that I dreamed of once in a lullaby. High, oh, somewhere over the rainbow, skies are blue and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true.
Had to let Mark play out his guitar solo there. So this was a nice little number. Any opinions on it, guys? Any opinions on Somewhere Over the Rainbow? No.
Oh, it was very
I always
nice.
Like the Is version of Over the Rainbow. So
yeah, it is the Is version of Over the Rainbow. So after this, we went back to the during this song actually, we got to see Shelby adopting Beth. and all of me.
She will forever be drizzled to me.
I know.
That's horrible.
I know.
Okay, and I know this is not anywhere based in reality, but seriously, that was the easiest, most seamless adoption ever.
We had a listener, a couple listeners emailed with the same thing.
Can you imagine? Like, yeah, she plans on putting the baby up for adoption, and, you know, I'm just shocked that, yeah.
No one has ever gotten to adopt a baby the day they decided to adopt a baby.
And to have a baby just available.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was pretty insane. We actually got a lot of email about the timeline on that, how kind of crazy. One listener described it as pulling it into a drive-thru and picking up a baby and then moving on. And then a lot of emails about the timeline wherein Quinn's water breaks, she goes to the hospital and delivers the child and is able to have the child delivered and be back, and the whole Glee Club is able in time to get back for the award ceremony without missing a beat.
One thing we forgot to mention was that when Quinn was giving birth, Brittany was holding her stomach in the lobby. So funny.
Yes, she was sort of like sympathy rocking.
That was a great moment.
It was cute.
There was that, and there was also a mention of it in the previous episode when the Glee Clubbers were cleaning up the teepeed choir room, that in the background you could see Brittany trying to wrap the toilet paper around an empty tube. Trying to like put it back.
I missed that.
Heather Morris didn't have any big jokes in this this episode, but she's become such a presence on screen. You're always looking at her, always trying to make sure, like, okay, what she's doing, because you know she'll be doing something good. And that's pretty much it. That's pretty much all I have for the finale. Guys, did we forget anything? Jennifer, did we forget anything about the finale?
I'm looking at it.
Looking at your notes. Ed, do you remember anything we forgot about the finale?
Yes, I have a comment, sort of.
Okay. Okay.
So the whole humanization of Sue Sylvester throughout the entirety of the season has, like, it finally felt like it had a purpose. Like, in today's episode, it was like, oh, this is why we realize she's been, like, this is why the writers kept telling us, yes, she's a human, yes, she's a human, yes, she's a human. And, like, this was, like, the culmination of that. And I was like, yep, this was the point.
So are you saying that they were driving that humanization to this point because they wanted us to believe that she would vote in favor of New Directions and let them keep going? Or are you saying...
Yeah, because otherwise it wouldn't be believable. Without, like, if you take out all the scenes with Sue's sister away from the episode, and all the scenes with Becky, the cheerleader, and with... Yeah, if you take out all those scenes, her doing this would seem completely illogical, even based on her logic of, oh, I respect you. No, that's bull. That's bull, Sue. Okay? So, yeah.
That's a really good point. I mean, I do think that it gave us a way that Sue was able to kind of help the Glee kids, but at the same time remain Sue. You know, I don't think that she's lost any of her fire. I do think that she'll continue to battle against Will. There's just going to be a new reason. And I think that we were able to get a softer side of Sue without losing her. So I think you make a really good point, Ed. I did write down, I think this was my favorite line of the episode. Sue said, I'm struggling to hear anything you're saying right now because your hair looks like a briar patch. I keep expecting racist animated Disney characters to pop up and sing songs about life on the bayou. So good. So
you just don't run out of ways to make fun of his hair.
I know, it's so funny. So wanted to thank everybody that's participated in the discussion of season one. We will be continue doing podcasts in the off season. Your homework, listeners, is to email us things we should talk about. So if you have topics for episodes you'd like us to go back, obviously we'll probably go back and discuss season one again. But, you know, if
you know
there's something...
You know what would be fun?
Go ahead.
If we, if we chose a character and, like, went through their entire storyline for the season.
We'll definitely talk about... Yeah, I think that would be cool, too. We'll see if we can make that work. So if you have an idea for what we should discuss in the off season, a story topic, an episode topic, go ahead and send it to us. Also, if you know any, like, we could interview people. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Chris Colfer's assistant totally gave me the shaft over Christmas break.
Of course he did. Chris Colfer is on freaking Jimmy Fallon. He doesn't want to talk
to us. So who should we be shooting for? Mike Chang?
I think we should totally be shooting for Mike Chang. I don't even think we should be shooting for Mike Chang. I think we should be shooting for Jesselyn Gilsig.
I hope we can. You know what I noticed? One of the girls that was handing out the pamphlets was also in the deaf choir.
Oh.
Like from way forever ago.
That was a long time ago.
Okay.
I'm always watching the first 13 because I have the DVDs. Fox, when are you releasing the back 9?
Yeah.
I need that.
A lot of people have asked. They have not mentioned it yet. Though I did see an interview with Jane Lynch where she said they're actually going to be releasing the entire season, not just the second half, which would bug me because then I'd have to buy a whole bunch of episodes I already have.
I know. I just want the second half. Yeah. Although, if I got the whole season, I could feel more... Like, I already hand this one out freely. I could just, like, really hand it out freely. Like, take it for as long as you want.
So, thank you to many of the listeners who emailed in. If you'd like to weigh in, you can email us at gleefulpodcast@gmail.com. We mentioned a couple on the show. I did want to call out listener Erica Bieber. She asked us to give her a shout-out. That is not her real last name, but it will be. And everyone else who sent in emails, you're all fantastic. Ed, do you want to mention some iTunes reviewers?
Yes, Mikhail Tumankur, the person that is not a Omgli Omgli Omgli, Sugarpop 88, Ruben Raz Raider, Kentucky's Gleek, Ash 141415, Sarasi, I don't know how to pronounce that. We got a lot of reviews. Hold on. I have to wait until the next page loads. Jacob Breaker, Aaron B. Dolphins Are Just Gay Sharks. Epic name, by the way. Crazy for Music 123. Jason Cheer 96. 49er Faithful. MJF 2001. I think that's it. I think we're up to date then.
We got an email from Dolphins Are Just Gay Sharks, and he sent a bunch of really cool mashups. So thank you for those. Listener,
you know, I was actually listening to some of those yesterday. I was listening to like Sweet Sweet Dreams.
So we also have a Facebook fan page if you'd like to go there, and we have our own website, which is www.gleefulpodcast.com. We're going to go ahead and leave you with the regionals version of Don't Stop Believin', bringing the show full circle, which I'm 99.9% sure was the first song we ever played. So how cool is that? For
what other song would be played? Yeah, that would be the first song to play, right?
For the Gleeful Podcast with Josh, Jen, and Ed, I've been Josh.
I'm Jen.
I'm Glee. Jazz hands. Peace out, Gleegasm, ZOMG.
Talk to you later, everybody. Going anywhere. Just a city boy, born and raised in South Detroit. He took the midnight train going smoky room.